Support of KQED's podcasts is provided by Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. Public radio programs and podcasts are available on demand with the Stitcher app. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. The Stitcher app is available at Stitcher.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at state politics, the longest-running political podcast on California government.
Great.
Maybe.
Lucky us.
You know, that's probably not even true, but...
I don't know if we get a nasty email from Temecula somewhere. Yeah, I've been podcasting in my basement for 14 years.
Exactly. The Calexico Political Report. And we're not being mean to either of those two communities.
Some of my best friends live in Temecula.
Do they really?
No.
Okay. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio. That's Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, always making this a fun weekly adventure. So we're talking about the budget. You're getting this early. Ooh, what a bonus, you podcast listeners, you.
Ooh.
So this is the podcast for Thursday, July 23rd. We have a deficit agreement that was reached on Monday night by the governor and the four legislative leaders.
All right.
We don't know if it's going to get voted on today, Thursday, tomorrow, Friday, so we thought, let's just put the podcast out. That way, if something implodes and the deal ain't done, then nobody can get mad that they had to listen to a podcast that wasn't about it, maybe, sort of.
Okay.
Whatever.
That makes sense to me.
That's a lousy explanation. Okay, so you know what frustrates me? Let's start off with frustrations.
What, this is like the what Sein- caller? This is like what frustrates you?
This is like the Seinfeld episode of a Festivus, where the beginning was the airing of grievances. So here's my first grievance. What is the size of this package, of this deficit package? It's 20-something billion dollars.
Five-ish?
Well, the governor always talked about 26 for weeks, and we knew that that had a built-in reserve, and no one in the press apparently cared about that. And so everyone wrote $26 billion deficit, which... I tried to fight the good fight, but you're like a
fish swimming upstream.
So that was $26 billion. Then on Monday night after the deal was struck, we were told it was a $25 billion proposal. The document that we have so far says a $24 billion proposal. Now, someone's going to email me and say, some smart person, and that there's some easy way to reconcile all of this. But I'm just going to call it, I'm not going to worry about it. Details, come on. I'm going to call it a 20-something billion-dollar proposal.
Well,
because
I think that the document says it's a $24 billion proposal with a $900 million
reserve.
So that,
it built in.
It's about
but built
25.
In. Because it says the shortfall, as you'll see, Anthony, we're both cribbing here, $23.1 billion projected budget shortfall plus a $900 million reserve makes a $24 billion solution.
Well, I'm doing math on a document that nobody can see. So
I know.
Let's move on.
Okay. Okay, but that's why I said it's
moving
20 something billion dollars.
Okay.
20 something billion dollars. I've just really stopped the podcast dead in its tracks. All right, but we were going to use this document to kind of give a broad overview of a few things because we know a fair amount about the agreement now. The bills are trickling out, and that's kind of part of the delay here in whether we know we're getting a vote on Thursday or Friday. So let's talk about the big overview. $15.3 billion in program reductions and cuts, about $4 billion in revenue accelerations and fees, which is an interesting part we'll talk about in a moment. $1.5 billion in fund shifts, which is the local gas tax mainly, the HUDA.
HUDA.
And the offshore oil drilling proposal, which we'll talk about in a minute. About $2 billion from property taxes from local governments, which is Prop 1A, cities and counties. And then this crazy one-time savings where you move a paycheck by a day and all of a sudden it's $1 billion.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. So let's talk about the deal overall. I mean, this was what?
This was what? this was largely the governor's proposal. I mean, I think that if you...
Now, the Dems say this was largely the conference committee proposal, so...
Okay.
Anyway, your spin.
Okay. I mean, I think that if you curb the extremes of the governor's proposal, eliminating healthy families, eliminating CalWORKs, I think that even when those things were proposed, none of us really took it terribly seriously. We didn't think that those programs would end up being eliminated, and so Democrats talk about being able to save the safety net, but if you look at the schools portion, for example, it was the conference committee proposal plus
more
$680 million additional dollars in cuts that the governor had proposed. You know, this is a budget that cuts some money to schools. We can talk about how that money is going to be backfilled by federal stimulus dollars, and some of it is just payment deferrals scored as cuts. We can talk about that later. Cuts money to schools, cuts money to social welfare programs, including CalWORKs, programs like Healthy Families, which provides health care to poor children, cuts a lot of safety net programs, has some of the provisions the governor wanted on cracking down on fraud and in-home support services and things like that that the governor had talked about, does not raise taxes. And so if you go item by item, I mean, I think that perhaps the fact that both sides are saying this is what we did maybe shows that there wasn't a whole heck of a lot of difference between the two proposals in the first place, except for some of the extremes, except for the elimination of certain certain social programs and, of course, taxes.
Well, certainly if you look at, and again, the draft floor report, which I'll put a link to on the website if you want to see it. But it's certainly if you look at the way they get to the $24 billion, sorry, I've brought that number back. But if you look at the way they get to the number, they're scoring K through 12 and community colleges as a $5.7 billion reduction, UC and CSU as $2.8 billion combined. And then, of course, there's about a $4 billion swing in local government, and a little bit more than that probably. So my point was going to be, over half, I think, if you do the math right, more than half is education and local government, which is, big hits for two big areas that people care about. And they'll feel that. And, the argument will be the Californians would feel that. You'd feel it. I mean, and that's assuming we haven't talked about the court challenges for local government. We'll do it in a minute. But that's assuming that all happens. All those services on the local level, schools with teachers laid off, tuition raises, caps on enrollment in some colleges and universities. I mean, these are big areas that Californians use.
Yeah, I do think that there have been efforts to mitigate these cuts wherever possible. The public education cuts, for example, this $5.7 billion that's being scored as cuts, about, I think, 1.7 of it is what they call deferred payments, money that was due to schools in this fiscal year, which now will be paid after June 30th into the next fiscal year.
Still a problem for them, but maybe
It's a delay,
right? Yeah.
And then the other $4 billion is money that will be able to be backfilled largely by federal stimulus.
We'll talk about that because, I mean, explain how you think that works, because, I mean, I think an ongoing debate has been how that federal stimulus money, which is a one-time event, how that money is supposed to be used. And if you back up and kind of look at it macro a little bit, the theory that the federal stimulus money is supposed to be a supplement to school funding, not a replacement, even though what you're laying out feels like a replacement.
Well, it is a replacement. It's a supplement to the funding, but the place that the federal government drew the line was a...
It is a supplement, but it's a
supplement. A supplement to the 2004-05 budget, right? So the federal government said, hey, look, we're looking back at 2005 and saying that you cannot go below the level of service you were providing at 2005 and get these federal dollars. And so... So there's the wiggle room. I mean, it's a replacement for the new money that schools are owed under the state constitution, under the Prop 98 formula, which we don't have to talk about that
no,
this week,
don't.
Do we?
No, we've done that. We
okay.
have overkilled on Prop 98.
But so it's a reduction from current levels, but it's not as low as 2005. And so that's how it's both a supplement and a replacement.
Very nice.
How's that?
And then let's talk about the local government part for a moment, because the local government folks had thought for a long time, you would talk to different sources around the building, and they thought, okay, well, we're going to get one of three bad options out of this deal. And at the end of the day, they got all three bad options.
Three.
They got the Prop 1A borrowing, which can only be done twice in 10 years as a result of 2004's Prop 1A. So it's local property taxes. They got the gas tax take, or their portion of the gas tax, which is the highway
user tax account.
Tax account, HUDA.
HUDA.
HUDA around the Capitol. Anam likes that one. She's shaking her head. and then there's the redevelopment money, which is money from redevelopment agencies, which I think is complicated and somewhat controversial too, because this is still kind of squishy in my head. If you've got a better way to describe it, go for it. But it's this notion that you take money from redevelopment agencies, and in exchange, some redevelopment agencies have their lifetimes extended because some of them were about to expire. They can go on a little bit longer. If you don't know this, and you probably don't know this because most people attention to all this, but redevelopment agencies get a share of property taxes as their funding source as well.
Right.
And counties in particular really don't like redevelopment agencies, I don't think, in a lot of ways, because that's a place that property taxes go that they could use for something else.
Right.
So the locals got nothing out of this that they wanted. It was a big hit to them, about $2 billion in 1A that they think they'll get paid back. They're supposed to get paid back, but that's a complicated scheme. The gas tax thing is a take. You don't get it back at all. The redevelopment thing is a take. You don't get it back at all. And they're going to go to court over the gas tax and the redevelopment, saying it's unconstitutional.
Right. Well, the problem, and again, I think there were efforts, if you talk to the folks in the Capitol, there were efforts to try to mitigate some of these cuts as well. They say that, you know, the locals, the money that the state is borrowing from the locals will be able to borrow from other sources.
Maybe.
And and that the state will cover the borrowing costs, will pay the interest that the locals have to borrow, right? There's some question about that. On the HUDA, on the highway gas tax, they said the state is making available bond funds to try to backfill some of that money. So
you're very popular here.
I'm blowing up. What can I say?
Cell phone.
You know, the word got out. I was podcasting, and then everybody wants a piece.
Your fan clubs out there. So right. There's a theory that they could have some of that infrastructure bond money maybe to kind of help things out.
Right.
Theoretically. Again. I mean, that's one of the big things is that all of this, none of this has ever been done before. This is all a brand new kind of idea. And this is not exactly like small chump change to cities and counties around the state. This is money they really need in these bad economic times.
Right. But this was the deal they cut, right? I mean,
the legislature and the governor cut.
No, Prop 1A.
Well, yeah, true. About. Right.
I mean, that was an initiative put on the ballot by the cities and counties. And so, you know, there's some question over whether the borrowing doesn't go into effect until December. The gas tax money and the local Prop 1A money, that $3 billion worth of cash does not start getting siphoned off until December. And we'll see. I mean, the cities came armed with a legal opinion from a big-time law firm in town here that says that the gas tax take is unconstitutional. So we're going to find out pretty quickly about that. And I think that gets us to another point, which is what are the pieces of this budget that are not real?
Yep.
I mean, we're talking about the sale of the state compensation insurance fund.
For $1 billion.
For $1 billion. Nobody that I talked to thinks that's going to happen. You know, there's some assets, some state assets, including the Orange County Fairgrounds that have been slotted for sale.
Well, let's talk about another part that's controversial when you talk about whether it's real or not, that's the offshore oil drilling part. That's the notion, if you haven't been following this one, this is effectively a new operation off of Santa Barbara County. It's called Tranquion Ridge, or T-Ridge, in all the documents you read at the Capitol. And it's effectively a new drilling operation off an existing platform.
Slant drilling,
as they call it. But it would be the first of its kind in state waters in 40 years. The environmentalists at one point supported the proposal when they thought it worked for them, when they thought it was enforceable, and I don't want to get too far down that. Then it appeared it wasn't. The State Lands Commission rejected the proposal. Now the legislature and the governor have agreed to resurrect it in exchange for $100 million. But you've got to believe that environmentalists may go back to court to say, you know, overstepping the authority of the Lands Commission and the process that works.
They've stripped the Lands Commission of the authority and given it to another panel where they'll have the votes to do it.
Right, a panel that would be controlled by the governor, I think.
The attorney general, the governor, and there's somebody help me out here. Yeah. But one
would wonder whether that's real, is my point, I guess, my big picture. It may be more real than what you laid out, but I do think it gets into the squishy part of the budget.
Yeah, and that's $100 million in revenue. And we're already seeing environmentalists in the state Democratic Party pushing back on that, urging the rejection of that proposal. There's also some questions about how the language is going to be drafted and whether, you know, there can be what's known in the Capitol as a poison pill provision put in there that theoretically makes it possible, but effectively and in actuality makes it impossible to actually get this drilling done. This was a concession politically or otherwise from Democrats. And I think, you know, you talk to Democratic leaders about why they did this, and they say, hey, look, it's $100 million, and, you know, that's essentially the cuts that we made to healthy families, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's a choice between a little bit of offshore oil drilling, which, you know, part of the deal is that first of all, there's no new construction and that they'll remove some existing oil platforms once they start this drilling off the coast of Santa Barbara there. But if it's a choice between getting this money and not being able to provide health care for children, then...
Well, and, you know, there were so many people who are core constituencies on the left or the Democratic Party or environmentalists who said, you know, how could they do this? How would they do it? And, you know, Speaker Karen Bass said it on Wednesday, and I would have guessed it even before she said it. She said, we did it because it's $100 million.
Right.
And I think the best example of how important $100 million became in a $88, $86 billion budget deal that would be the size of the state budget for the year 2009, 2010. So not the deal, sorry. That's 20-something billion. Sorry, I'll stop. But the way that you're just telling me to get to my point. I got the little hurry-up sign from Anthony. But the reason $100 million is so important or a great example of why it is look at the cut to state parks.
Right.
That saves $8 million. With an M, $8 million, and it may close up to 50 state parks, between 30 and 50. If you have to save $8 million and close parks, you know, if that's important money in this deal, you can damn well believe that $100 million becomes important.
And yet, we've got a situation with the corrections piece of the budget, which we'll talk about.
Which we need to talk about now. Let's do it.
And we're not going to be voting on it this week. We're gonna wait 2 weeks. And by the governor's... By the administration's tally, that 2-week delay in voting on these corrections cuts is going to cost the state $50 million. Because, I mean, the Secretary Matt Cate, the corrections secretary, said every day that we don't enact these cuts, we lose $3 to $4 million, $100 million a month. So a 2-week delay to give some folks some political cover, which is what this looks like from where we're sitting, is going to cost the state $50 million. That's half the money you get from the offshore oil drilling.
Well, let's figure out what happened with prisons, because prisons took up a lot of time. I mean, this week has felt incredibly long. I mean, we got the notice that the Big Five had struck a deal at about 7 o'clock Monday night.
Right.
We're sitting here on Thursday afternoon, and it feels like there were 20 days in between then and not three to me in some ways. But so... On Wednesday or on Tuesday, Tuesday. On Tuesday, this whole prisons thing blew up. The very next day, the prisons thing blew up because you and I and every reporter sitting in the briefing with legislative staff Monday night saw the $1.2 billion number without any specifics.
Right.
And probably all of us did the little thing in our head going, well, how do you get to $1.2 billion? What's it going to be?
Wait, no, you're off message.
Yeah, sorry.
How could you ask such a question?
How could you ask for details? Jeez. So, right, so we all wanted to know what the $1.2 billion figure was. On Tuesday, the Los Angeles Times put up in the afternoon a reduction of the prison population by 27,000 people, 27,000 inmates.
Right.
Now, herein lies a key problem at how we got to where we were. For one reason or the other, I don't know whether you and the public want to say the story didn't have enough context or the Republicans in the Capitol didn't put it in the context they wanted to put it in.
They didn't say anything.
Well, they did ultimately. I mean, through emails and stuff that you published.
Right.
But my point is, somewhere in there, no one got a clear sense of how you got 27,000 people out of the prisons. And the way the administration told the story by Tuesday night in a conference call with reporters that was very wonkish but was quickly, I think, organized to try to provide some cover.
Yeah.
You get there through over time. You don't release 27,000 immediately. You reduce the population of people who are even going into prison. You do release some people, but you don't release 27,000.
Right.
But it got turned into something else, which is kind of what you picked up on in the memo from the Republicans.
Right, that the Republicans were saying this amounted to early release, right? This was the catchphrase of the middle of the week,
right?
Early release. And you know, politically, that's a problem for the Republicans. I mean, I think there were portions of this budget deal, and I wrote about this week in Capital Weekly and sort of an analysis of what happened. There were portions of this budget deal that were designed for political cover. Republicans couldn't be seen as giving votes to a deal that included as part of the deal a plan to release prisoners early. That was not sellable to their constituents, to their allies in law enforcement. It just wasn't sellable. And so we have to go through this for lack of a better word, I'll just say charade, right? A wink and a nod of...
Shocking.
Of, all right, well, we've scored the savings, but we're going to postpone this till later. And so somehow by extracting the two votes, by separating the prisons vote from the budget vote, somehow in some parallel universe, this provides some political cover. I don't get it. There are people who are smarter than me who care about this more than I do, about how the politics of this works. But it was important enough to at least rhetorically, I don't know that the deal was ever really in jeopardy, but there was a, to use your, what was your word, breathless? Was that your word? It was a very dramatic email that we saw from Assembly Republican leader Sam Blakesley,
right,
going out to his constituents saying, hey, if this is what they're pushing, then the deal's off. And the real irony of this, I mean, if you kind of step back, big picture, is how quickly the shoe flew onto the other foot, right, where you had suddenly it was cuts being proposed by the governor and Democrats, mm-hmm, that the Republicans didn't like. The governor is consistent with his message saying we need to do this all at once. We need to save as much money as possible. And it's the Republicans balking, saying, no, hey, wait a minute, slow this train down.
And now you're the insider expert here. And I want you to be, you can opine as the insider guy who knows all the skinny, as you call it in the paper. But I didn't spend, you've got good sources. I didn't spend a lot of time trying to figure out this part because at the end of the day, we still have to talk about the policy issue.
Right.
But I never got a clear sense as to whether the prison's cuts were left as an open issue in the Big Five or not. I mean, you know, you hear it different ways. You hear that there was, you know, that there was a possible understanding that the bill that had specific cuts in it would come up as part of this, that it would not, that it was left like, well, we'll wait and see. And so what we're going to get out of this deal, I mean, and you've said it, but I want to kind of make sure it's clear, what we're going to get out of this vote is an unallocated cut, basically a spot. It's not a spot bill because it's in the middle of another bill, but a thing that says we're going to cut prisons by $1.2 billion, and we'll deal with the policy debate of how we get to that later. And I can't figure out whether everybody thought that was what was going to happen or not, and whether the blow up was real or not.
I think it was partially a question of interpretation of what later meant. Did later mean August?
What is.
Yeah, I mean, did later mean August, which is what the Republicans were arguing? Did later mean later this week? Did later mean, you know, next week? And that debate, I mean, I think we saw the governor actually kind of turn in the heat on Republicans. It was coming from the administration, the urgency to get this done, and that's what we saw in the press briefing on Tuesday night with the corrections secretary. They wanted to keep the heat on and get this done as quickly as possible.
The full court press, even called it.
Yeah, so that the state could save as much money as possible.
But this also was atmospherics, was it not? Because when you look at the cuts to, you know, the things you have to do to the Department of Corrections, that's a majority vote bill.
Right.
You don't need Republicans, technically.
Right.
If you've got agreement between the Democratic majority and the governor, you don't need them. In which case, it becomes atmospherics. It's a bill that Republicans were never going to have to vote for. Your point is, if it was attached to the package, then they get lumped in public.
Right. And it looks, and this is the budget choreography. I mean, the budget's going to be broken up into into 28 bills.
Yeah.
Some people are going to vote for some and not for others. And there's a lot of politics to this. Remember, in the Assembly, for example, you've got a couple of moderates in the Assembly, and then you have three Democratic members
who are all running for
Attorney General.
And the law enforcement groups knew that, and the law enforcement groups had a list that they were already starting last weekend, targeting those Dems and targeting others who they thought they might have a campaign issue
right
about.
And so the question is, if everybody agrees that the $1.2 billion is going to be cut, and my understanding, I've seen a list of $400 million worth of line item vetoes that the governor is going to make to the corrections budget to save cuts. There's agreement on that $400 million. The debate is over the other $800 million. The Democrats adopted a package about $790 million worth of cuts through certain changes in sentencing laws that was adopted by the conference committee, very closely mirrors proposals from the governor. The Republicans don't like them. They think that it amounts to, this again, early release of prisoners. So the question is, this is the question now, I think, still, What's the Republicans' plan? I mean, maybe it doesn't matter because the Republicans know that this is a majority vote bill and that they know they're going to get rolled on this and that's part of the deal and they're essentially going to put up the no votes but allow
But a pesky reporter like you or me or someone else would have to say, if you're not going to support this, what would you have supported?
Hey, that's what I've been doing the last 2 days. And
how's that going for you?
Well, this is I could tell our podcast listeners first that what I get from my Republican sources in the building is that there is a plan. There's paperwork on a Republican plan for prison cuts, but we can't see it.
It's a secret plan to fight inflation,
that's right.
As the joke used to be.
That's right.
All right. Well, I'm sure next week, if we do a podcast, furlough willing, we'll see. Yeah, we might not do one.
We didn't even talk about
it. I know, and actually, I told people there wasn't going to be one this week, and the furlough hasn't happened yet because of the budget. All right, well, we're kind of running long on the podcast here. We don't need to go through a whole lot more that we probably should. I will link the floor report if people want to see it. I do want to just mention briefly the Health and Human Services changes because, I mean, this was a big issue of the governor. This was a big flashpoint with Democrats about how much you were going to change those. CalWORKs and home support services, healthy families. I mean, the things that the governor calls reform of CalWORKs and in-home support services, fingerprinting recipients of IHSS, possibly eliminating the subsidies for kids whose parents don't meet work requirements in CalWORKs. These are changes the governor is touting and is trying very hard to call big reform victories. I have a little trouble with defining these as big so far in the way that the governor has always talked about his desire to reform government. They are changes. And so I don't know. I don't know what to make of those yet.
We'll now be fingerprinting anybody who disabled people who receive benefits. There you go.
Is that blowing up a box of government, as he said famously in that speech?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Is there a fingerprinting box?
I don't know. There's certainly like a surplus, a property box or something, because that was the other big thing this week where he's going to do the great big garage sale of state items. And then he had his infamous YouTube Twitter video where he talked about autographing vehicles for auction. But, of course, most of the attention was this big paperweight knife that he held in the beginning of the video, which, you know, was kind of a distraction from the other issue. But
didn't want him to be Mr. Stiffy or whatever it was.
I think he said he didn't want to be El Stiffo. He needed to have a sense of humor.
Right.
We'll just let those comments stand where they are. Okay, so we're waiting for the budget vote. If we have a podcast next week, my schedule's in flux, so stay tuned. But if we have one, we can kind of go from there. I do think the prison stuff is going to be interesting to watch. And last but not least, which we haven't talked about, but we just have to put on the record, how will this deal be viewed by Wall Street? That is a major, major question that we don't have the answer for yet, because we need Wall Street cash. We need to borrow money from them no matter what in the next few weeks and months to stay afloat. And so all the gimmicks that you and I notice, what do they do on Wall Street? We don't know.
No, and the treasurer this week after the deal was announced said it's too early to tell, but that will be another moment of micro-drama when the treasurer goes out. And
micro-drama. I like that.
Yeah, when we get some word from our Wall Street conduit, Bill Lockyer, about how this deal will be received.
And the controller has to decide, John Chung, about the IOUs and when he can cut them off based on how much cash he gets.
And that's the other question is how long will this deal hold for our cash flow? I mean, will this solve our cash problem through the end of June? Or as revenues continue to decline, are we going to have to open up the books again sometime before the end of the year and do it all again?
For the answer to those questions and more, I feel like the end of a serial. Tune in next week, same time.
Can't you? Is there some Cronkite?
Same
homage
bat channel.
No.
There've been enough of those. He would have already not been happy with our loose style. I think he was a little more formal. Anyway,
that's the way it is.
That is the way it is, Uncle Walter. That's Anthony York from Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED. We will, whenever it is, we'll see you next time.